Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
Time now for the call-in. Last week, we heard from you about how the economy is faring in your community. While unemployment has hit record lows, there's another number that also gets a lot of attention: underemployment. Around 33% of college graduates are underemployed. That measures the number of workers placed in jobs that are below their qualifications from a bachelor's and beyond. But as we heard from you, it has a different effect depending on your field of work. Julia Fallon of Jacksonville, Florida, is about to graduate from her paralegal certification program in a few weeks. She received her bachelor's in American Sign Language interpretation, but she couldn't find stable work. She says her biggest frustration now is not the lack of jobs for paralegals, but the pay.
I've been astonished at the lowballing that is going on, even for attorneys, let alone paralegals, which at the beginning of the program I was told would be much better paying than what I'm actually looking at.
Josh Borkhart of Minneapolis, Minnesota, graduated with his master's in space studies and planetary sciences. After years of working odd jobs and barely making ends meet, he decided to go back to get his teaching license.
I worked 3 years off and on doing odd jobs, research jobs, all the way to working retail. Then I'm almost 30 years old now, and I've never made more than about $25,000 a year.
Josh's investment in getting retrained paid off, though. He recently got a job offer at a high school teaching science. People are having trouble finding jobs in their chosen field, but some employers complain that they're having trouble filling jobs. To help us understand that disconnect, we're joined now by Dawn Fay. She used to be a recruiter. She's now a hiring manager and district president of a recruiting agency, Robert Half. And Scott Dabrowski is an employer trends analyst at Glassdoor. Welcome to the program, both of you.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Scott, I want to start with you. What are employers saying about the labor market right now? Is this a good time to be applying for jobs?
The overall message is it's very much a job seeker's market. But what we are seeing in data trends, as well as hearing anecdotally from employers, they are still having a tough time finding quality candidates who can tackle tomorrow's business challenges in their respective kind of pool or lane, what they do best. So they're looking for some skills such as data analytical skills, critical thinking skills that some candidates may or may not have. And so that's the difference between a good candidate and really a quality candidate.
Dawn, what are you hearing from hiring managers?
Well, as Scott had mentioned, there are certainly a lot of jobs open in the market. And whenever there is an increased demand due to growth, sometimes companies, they know they need the extra help, but they're not sure exactly what they need. And at those times, it seems that they're finding a harder time matching the candidate with the job.
Why that disconnect?
You know, sometimes people are looking for skill sets that are really so vast that they sometimes cover more than one area. And what companies need to do is get a little bit more focused, a little bit more granular on the skills they need, not absolutely everything, A through Z, because a lot of times people do not have that, but they've got enough of those skills where they can come in, add value to an organization, and really help them grow, and then get more skills within the company as they go and be a really valued candidate for that company.
So Scott and Don, what I'm hearing from both of you is that it's the companies that are asking maybe too much of the people that they're looking for, rather than they're not being qualified people. And that's because we're in this age of disruption, right, where people really don't know what the next phase of their business may be.
I think that's definitely part of it. I think what's going on also with a lot of jobs, especially since the Great Recession, many employers are still building back out. And what they're doing is trying to be much smarter about the jobs that they offer and the people they find. And so pinpointing that right person is tougher, but at the same time, they could be asking for too much.
Scott, what role does education have? Are universities and colleges doing enough to help job seekers prepare for this economy, in your opinion?
We definitely think there's still a large disconnect between what academic universities have to offer to prepare students for the real world. So, for instance, data science is one of the best examples to look at. The data science world is an industry, a world that almost every single employer needs and wants now. Everyone has an online presence. Everyone is trying to get to more users or customers. And so the data scientist is someone who studies all of this and using data makes really smart business recommendations. However, it's really interesting that up until a few years ago, data science wasn't even a major or something that people could learn about, study about, and learn that code in college. So over the past few years, we've seen a small handful of universities starting to introduce an actual data science program, but it's actually semi-baffling that this is such a fast-growing skill set, yet it didn't exist up until recently.
People who might be looking for jobs and now or in the future, people just leaving college, would love to hear, what's your best advice to someone entering the job market, either people that are new to job searching or people who are trying to transition to something else?
You know, I think the most important thing people can do whenever they're looking for a role is to really use their network. It's so important to talk to people within the industry that you have interest in, within those jobs and skill sets that you have interest in, get their advice, find out how they got there, find out what types of things that you can be doing as an individual to get some more skills and to get better educated in that area, and let people know you're eager to get into that space because they can help you potentially be a referral and refer you into an organization and help you get that first step in.
So it sounds like there are plenty of opportunities in this labor market, but there is also an affordability crisis. Many of the people who called in talked about the fact that they couldn't afford to take entry-level jobs, even though they're qualified.
I completely agree. It's also knowing about, before you say yes to a job or an employer, make sure to ask about career opportunities and upward mobility. Are there advancement opportunities at that organization? And it's also about having a career progression plan. You may have to take a parallel step sometimes. You may have to do a job. It's not exactly what you want to do, but you do that, gain some added experience, and then you know in 1 to 2 years, it could hopefully catapult you to something else. So again, research the job opportunity or the employer. It's too easy to know this day and age, and then, you know, take the right job for you.
Scott Dabrowski is an employer trends analyst at Glassdoor. Don Fay is district president of the recruiting agency Robert Half. Thank you both so very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Context of white supremacy. Gusty Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, July 19th, 2018. So I have been told. This is our weekly broadcast, Neutralizing Workplace Racism. Regardless of what constructive activity we have produced here at the Cows for almost a decade, whether it's been helpful or not towards the permanent resolution of white supremacy racism, I do think this broadcast and this subject matter is extremely important as long as the system of white supremacy exists, in terms of how we function on the job, what happens to us at work. So many non-white people around the world spend time there, whether they're self-employed, whatever we classify as work. So many of us spend so much of our waking hours in this environment being terrorized by racists directly, indirectly, not being compensated correctly. All of that is just a different aspect of terrorism. That is what this broadcast is about. The number to dial for folks, if you have suggestions, if you are not being terrorized in the workplace, if you have nipped all of that in the bud, as they say, the number to dial, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Before we get directly to workplace racism, I just want to make sure it's on the record. I'll probably say this again over the next week or so, just for emphasis. There have been massive disruptions in terms of technical disruptions with the program over the past week or so, particularly archived content. Some of the archived content, I thought those issues were corrected, and a lot of the broadcast from 2015 should be available. I think there's still some issues with some of the older content, like 2012, 2013, 2014. But as I had said before, it's hundreds of programs over that four-year span, might be close to 1,000, and that's Gus having to go back individually, manually, to upload that content again from the hard drive. It is an arduous task to go back and correct that. In addition to that issue, there has been an issue with uploading the most recent content, like the content from July, to the iTunes feed. Our content is also available at Black Talk Radio Network. It's current there. Everything is available. The content is also archived at SoundCloud. Everything except for the book club. I don't put the book club there just to try to make sure that we do not have any unnecessary problems with whites. But other than the book club, the current content is at SoundCloud and it is up to date, with the exception of this current episode, obviously. But those two sources are available, working fine. The iTunes feed, there had been none of the most recent content from July. That is no longer the case. I was able to get about four or five episodes uploaded earlier today. I think there's still approximately a half dozen or so episodes that I'm trying to get uploaded, but there's something, this is beyond a Gus problem. This is, there seems to be some interference or perhaps even a site-wide issue where other people were having problems getting content uploaded so that it would go to the iTunes feed. I will update as that problem is corrected. Hopefully it will not take too long. I just process all of this as racist interference. And what prompted me, or really reminded me, to make sure that I included all this, and I'll be sure to emphasize this for our next week or so of broadcasting, when I was, one of the things that delayed us starting timely today was I was attempting to share that we were broadcasting live on Facebook, and the link that I use for the cows, it was reporting that that was a blocked and unsafe link, and it would not allow me to post the event for the cows broadcast, and it would not allow me to edit the link, change it, anything. It totally locked the event, would not allow me to post anything. I've never had this problem posting any of the cows content to Facebook in the 10 years that we have been doing the program. But not to be, you know, a shock or anything stunning, but wanted to make sure that I reported that. That is the system of racism, white supremacy, just constant interference. And me, a black male victim of racism, deemed unsafe for posting about a broadcast where victims of white supremacy are encouraged to call in to speak about their trouble being terrorized on the job. That is deemed unsafe, dangerous content. Anywho, many listeners wrote in today. All of that is on the back burner because yoga. Now, I've been in teacher training for nearly a month, which is amazing. It has been a very, very busy summer. To think that it is already half over is amazing. So teacher training, there is a black female that's in teacher training along with Gus T, which has made teacher training much more enjoyable, much more manageable, and even opened up opportunities to talk about racism, white supremacy. I spoke with said black female about a week ago, or we had been chatting, you know, hither and thither beforehand, but we had never really sat down to have a lengthier chat where I could ask, oh, by the way, do you have white friends? So before we get to the conversation where I was able to ask said question, we come in and it was so beautiful because I just spoke, not just last week, but I spoke twice about how I make a point, teacher training, I speak to everyone. I don't care. All the whites, Roger, evening, Samantha, how you doing? Ted, all right. I call them by name. That's just my code. And even with this, even though this is not a job situation where you could be fired or you don't get a raise, obviously, a part of the teacher training is you are supposed to have a rapport with the students as you are conducting your class. You're supposed to talk to them after class, that sort of thing. That is something that you're evaluated on. So an accusation of you being aloof with people, that could be something that could harm you in going through the process. So my code, just, hey, speak to everybody. If you're in a workplace type situation or a class situation, you know, no problem. Speak to the professor and keep it moving. So I speak to everyone. Black female, she comes in and she's, hey, what's up, blah, blah, blah. And she says, I just saw white male that's in our teacher training class. I was just a block away from the yoga studio. I saw him and I waved like, hey, hey, Craig, what's up? And she says that racist man suspected, he's coming down the sidewalk and he looks at her and sees her waving. And then he, you know, does the look away like, oh, I didn't see that, really, nigger. And so he keeps walking, doesn't speak. And she's like, you know, I looked right at him. He looked right at me and, you know, kept on walking. And it's like, man, see, that's exactly what I'm talking about. And I'm cracking up laughing. And so for you to get the extra joke of this, I have to pause in the story and give you a little background. So like in yoga, if you've seen any of the like commercials or films or anything where they do the om, the chanting together, right? So, which is not a part of my practice, but that's a story for another day. So in our teacher training, you know, the Negro vernacular homies, this is for my homies. So in our teacher training, instead of homies, we have omies. Let me get back to the story. So black female comes in, racist man suspected, didn't speak to me, blah, blah, blah. She says, to top it all off, that he looked right in my face and didn't speak, this was my omie. I'm cracking up laughing. And the thing that I think is great about this is that she finds this to be funny as well. This was not something where she was upset. This is not something where she was, I can't believe it. My feelings are hurt. I thought that was my own. We were down. Not at all. It didn't even seem like she was surprised about any of this. She just moved on about her day. And then the best part, when he came in, hey, I just spoke to you. Did you see me out on the sidewalk? He says, oh, my goodness. No, not at all. I didn't even see you. What are you talking about? She says, you looked right in my face. What are you talking about? Like I waved and everything. It's like, oh, I don't know. The sun must have gotten my eyes. There was a glare or something. I just didn't see. And he walked off. Oh, it was brilliant. And again, even with that in mind, it does not change my code at all. I went in the next class that we had, which was yesterday, speak to everyone, call them by name. Evening, Jennifer. Hi, Samantha. All right. Nice to see. Same thing. The way that I would normally function is not about them talking to me or thinking that we're friends or anything of the sort. This is just, you know, how I conduct myself in a work-like environment. Professional courtesies, as I call them. continuing. So many things came up with regards to yoga, but we could talk about that on another day. Getting to people that wrote in, quite a few people wrote in this week, both with problems and suggestions. We'll see if I can get them all in. First person, we've had a number of folks who have done some form of ride sharing and have talked about the experience of white supremacy racism in that field. Person writing here, I believe, is working with Uber. So they write, I suspect that Uber is encouraging riders to criticize our all-around services. I received a complaint that the passenger didn't like the genre of music I was playing, Robert Glasper and Friends, the great Robert Glasper. As soon as I saw the complaint on my Uber app, the next three passengers, including an Asian male leaving the racket club, was expressing his liking of the tunes. Last, a white adult male told me that he thoroughly reviewed my background on the Uber app, where he viewed my total trips close to 4,000. Not good. End of report. I can only say again, I think maybe a week or two ago, many times this summer on workplace racism specifically, I have said if you are a black person, you are under surveillance on the job. That's just what it is in any capacity. Whites keep an eye on Negros. That is one of their prime duties worldwide on the planet. So it should not be a surprise that any type of information that you have, data that's available, that whites are just going to go through that. And I mean, go through it maybe with a fine tooth comb, as they say, to thoroughly, comprehensively examine and glean as much information as they can. That's how their system operates. Also wouldn't surprise me about the complaints to encourage that sort of thing, critiques. I don't know if that impacts your standing with the company and that sort of thing, but it would not surprise me if there was some sort of encouragement for whites to kind of downgrade drivers or complain about anything. You know, his mirrors were dirty in the car and he's playing that no good. Incidentally, I think many whites in my experience are big fans of Robert Glasper. He came to Seattle and did a cover of Nirvana's Big Jam, so they love Robert Glasper out here. Continuing, trying to get to some of the folks who actually wrote in. I think I am obligated to begin with the person who actually wrote in with suggestions. Always, if you come up with counter-racism code that you think will benefit some non-white people, if you do some things that work out well for you, bravo, number one. And then definitely, if you can codify it, write it down, pick out exactly what it is that you said, did, didn't do, didn't say, that produced a constructive result. That is always appreciated. I try and solicit that as often as I can. So if you are in that position, hey, this worked out. Even if you stumble into it like, wow, I'd even have to sit and think for a second what I did that worked out so well. Okay, this is what it is. This is what I said that, or this was the specific question that I asked. Always helpful. Drop us an email. So first person wrote in, black female, commuting in NYC while black, also, or in my view, commuting in NYC while under the system of white supremacy, most accurate. I recently started commuting to my new job in the Wall Street area. When I interviewed for the position, I was told that I would be working at another place 4 days a week and would only have to come to the Wall Street office once a week. Racists love to switch things up, in parentheses. Anyway, as a black female, I noticed that a white man was hovering over me with his phone while I was seated. It appeared that this man was leering at my breasts, so I started having an induced coughing attack, aiming my coughs his way and without covering my mouth, something that white people do all the time, in parentheses. This strategy worked so well that I also implemented it at work when a white coworker started asking me questions. Here are some other commuting strategies to help reduce stress and terrorism by whites. Number one, download the public transportation app so that you know if there is a delay to avoid. Number two, have an alternative route that will allow you to get to work on time. Number three, always, and she has always in all caps, leave early. Number four, listen to meditation music if feeling stressed, and do deep breathing. They do a lot of that in yoga. Number five, if the train or bus is always crowded, try to get on the bus or train at an earlier stop. Number six, carry as little as possible. Number seven, wear comfortable shoes. Number eight, Roz suggested to be prepared to walk in case of an emergency, so have a flashlight, snack, cash, medication on you. Perseverance. Investor, longtime listener, very constructive suggestions. Mr. Fuller was talking about the importance of being punctual on the job. That is one that whites love to exercise discretion to fire Negras at their whim. Let's see, I will try to read one more and then we can get to live callers. Let's see. Person that wrote in. All right. In regard to neutralizing workplace racism, I work at an accountant firm and had a racist situation occur a couple of months ago. I was opening a file drawer, which I had to kneel down to open, and a suspected racist white female said to me, "Are you breaking into the drawer?" Which immediately got my attention because I wasn't struggling with it or anything. I just opened and closed it. Furthermore, I did not know this woman. I replied, "Why would I break into a drawer?" Questions. She said, "If you are, I won't tell anyone." And then she laughs. I did not reply or laugh. I took a final look at her and then walked away. However, it bothered me and was still on my mind throughout the day. So I went back and wrote down her name, her office location, the time and date it occurred, and what she had just said. Bravo. Just in case I have another interaction with her and she establishes a pattern of racist behavior. I hadn't listened to the cows as regularly as I do now back then when this occurred, but I have listened to previous interviews from the archives. However, once I came across the workplace racism broadcast and heard other victims' experiences, I didn't feel alone in calling out what others have told me were minor incidents or misunderstandings, end quote. It's a practice, exclamation mark, a practice that racists are getting better and more blatant about. Workplace racism that I've heard from others is usually discussed amongst their loved ones and friends privately and usually dismissed and or not addressed at the workplace. So I'm grateful for the cows and this open dialogue. Thanks to the callers and he plans to get a cows t-shirt. Well, if they are still available, cowsshirt@gmail.com. You can email Dr. Trav, cowsshirt@gmail.com, and let him know about the t-shirt situation if you would like one or three or what the sizes are that they have remaining. Email is untiljustice@gmail.com if you want to write in, if you are not able to call in. If you have a problem or if you have suggestions that you would like to share that, you know, might help folks solve some problems on the job. With the first email, wow, could not pass the white man leering race soldier. That phenomenal, outstanding job we talked about before. Really being mindful of your surroundings. I think I've given out the suggestion and I think some others have as well about having mirrors at your workplace so that way you can kind of increase your peripheral vision to kind of see if people are trying to sneak up on you. We've had something to talk about racist patterns. We've had so many instances of this over the years, whites sneaking up. I will say that's a little bit unique in terms of I don't recall off the top of my head a moment of a race soldier standing over a black female or non-white female in some sort of perverted act. To be a peeping Tom, basically, sexually harassing, sexually terrorizing a non-white person on the job in this manner. But that is outstanding, one, to be alert of what's happening, and then to immediately go on the offensive to get this person moved. And non-verbals, I've said that before as well, but in this situation, outstanding job of non-verbals not saying anything, not doing anything. And if anything, if something gets reported, just, oh man, I wasn't even aware that he was behind me. I got so clogged up. I felt like I was choking and it was a terrible situation. I had such a nasty fit of coughing. I just didn't see Bob behind me there. I thought he was on the phone. It sounded like someone was talking. I didn't even know what was going on there. Just glad I made it through alive. You know, that sort of thing. If it's a coughing fit, and to know that this worked again, when the race soldier was peppering her with questions, Perseverance went back to the same tactic and have had success with this twice, might be something others can employ. Breaking out with coughing and not covering the mouth. Sneeze, I guess, would work there too if you got one in similar situations. But I mean, wow, that's something right there to be mindful of in the workplace. This sort of thing, if you're sitting down, all whites or even white women. I think Red in Nevada talked about that. A white woman on her job kind of making some sort of fetishy comment about her lipstick. Just be mindful of your surroundings. Be mindful, mirrors, whatever it is, just to know what's happening around you. And again, we've talked about this, not being surprised about any sort of unwanted touching, sexual comments, lewd remarks, whatever it is. Not being surprised about this. This is racist man, racist woman we're talking about. We see these reports every day. What is my strategy going to be when this happens to me, male or female? That's the way that we should be proactively thinking as attempted counter racists. What is my strategy going to be? That's when I hadn't really, you know, processed the someone looking down above you. But for females, be thinking of that, especially I would think in the summertime when, you know, a lot of us might be wearing a little less clothing because of the weather. Be particularly mindful of that when we are on the jobs and already have your strategy, especially if it seems like people are kind of hovering in your space. With that, I'll hush. We have other people that wrote commentary in. I'll share as we proceed. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-#. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks who dialed in with a hand up, line should be open if you have either your own commentary or if you want to comment on what some of the folks who wrote in had to say. That is fine as well. If you have a hand up, line should be open. Proceed.
Hello?
Let's see. One more time, ma'am.
Oh, hi. Jess, can you hear me?
Yes, ma'am. Draftomania.
Yes, it's Draftomania. How are you today? I already know you're going to say quite poorly, and so am I. Hi to you and all of the guests. I wanted to report on some workplace racism on the job. I was thrown into some new tasks, and I wasn't trained on it. And I know by listening to Nellie Fuller and listening to the cows and hearing how, you know, they often, you know, white supremacists often, what they do, they, you know, they give you these new assignments, and they don't train you on it. So last Wednesday, when I wanted to work, this was the task that I'm doing, I was supposed to be trained on it when I initially started the job, but they never, you know, trained us for it, and they never, you know, got me started with doing this learning this new software, this computer program that we have to use, right, database, in order to take the calls. So basically, Wednesday night, we get in there, and they just throw us, like, you know, just throw us on the phones. You know, we got to just learn this stuff as we go, as we're on the phones. And, you know, so, like, needless to say, what I ended up doing, because, like, I know, like, my patterns is what I would usually do is I would get some anxiety, and I would feel nervous, you know, a little nervous because I'm, you know, a little fearful because I'm not trained on how to do something, and then the fear of, like, me making a mistake and things like that. But I've just been learning how to breathe and staying calm. You know, I've just been like been taking the advice that you've been suggesting, Gus, and some of the other things that I've been doing with the breathing. And I just stay calm, and I've just been going through the workflow chart. And I haven't been getting real nervous. Have I made some mistakes? Yes. But I'm looking at it from the standpoint of, you know, I haven't been trained properly. So if I make mistakes, it's because I haven't been trained properly. So yesterday, Thursday night, I was on a call, and I didn't know what to do as far as what one of the steps. So the supervisor, the supervisor that was telling you about that, the suspects have been using, you know, to, you know, get at me or what have you. She's my supervisor. So when I asked her about what to do, she basically, you know, she seems like, you know, kind of like attitude-y, like, you know, like she didn't want to, but I just signed up for my break. And I was like, well, I need some help here because I really don't know what to do. But I was still calm, but I was feeling like, you know, the only way I'm going to get some help is by asking, you know. So basically what it is, Gus, is that she doesn't even know what to do either. So we're both, you know, we're like on these calls, and we have these people on these calls for like a half an hour trying to go through these steps and trying to find out what to do. And what's been happening is, you know, people have been hanging up or what have you. But all I can say, as long as I'm just going through the initial steps and doing what I'm supposed to do, I'm just going to, you know, leave it like that. And just, you know, I'm going to just continue to just try to go through the flow chart, try to ask questions, try not to respond, you know, when I see, you know, little attitudes or whatever, because I'm asking for help. That's what I think I'm supposed to do. You know, I was told that I'm supposed to ask for help. I ask questions when I don't know something. And, you know, just stay kind of calm. But it just seems to be like the way this victim is like kind of acting, you know, it's just kind of like some things that's been kind of evident that, you know, like, She's not even trained properly either. So I'm just trying to be patient with her. And, you know, I don't know. Like I said, it's a little stressful when you haven't been trained properly, and they're just, you know, you just get thrown into the deep end of the pool, and you're expected to know how to do things. So I don't know. But as far as they have a Caucasian there that she does, she's supposed to get trained, supposed to be doing the same thing that we're doing, but they haven't given her any access to that system yet. She's been having problems with it. So we'll see. I'm just going to take it one day at a time. And that's all I got, Gus. And thanks for allowing me to share.
Much obliged, Draptomania. We have talked about that, what seems like for years. Talk again, racist patterns where they set black people up for failure. They don't even at McDonald's anywhere in the world, I don't think, just bring you in and throw you on the French fry machine without training you. They just expect you to get those fries done. We don't have no training program. You're supposed to know how to get the fries done. They don't even do that at McDonald's. They give you a training program. Like, that's just common sense, and they do that consistently with black people where we don't get any training. Then they get an attitude if you ask, well, wait a minute, I don't think that I've been properly informed so that I can efficiently do my job. What? What do you mean training? What do you mean asking for questions? Get over there and get that done. Stop asking so many. We've heard that for years on the job. And
yeah, that's exactly what I was told. Like when I asked one of the trainers, one of the supervisors, floor walkers, I said, "Well, you know, I haven't been trained. Well, that's their way, the company's way. None of us was trained." And I'm like, you know, this is exactly what I'm being told. Like, you know, like it's okay. So we just go. You have that's just our way. That's our policy.
Again, the system of white supremacy. And if such is the case, that would still be something that I would write down. I don't think it's too many jobs, too many companies where you want an employee saying on the record, we don't do training. That's the company way. We don't do training. I don't think it's too many places where you want that on the record as stated like, oh yeah, this is official policy about our view on training. But either way, that's the sort of thing that I would want written down. And I would just continue to ask questions at all of that. And calmly, like one of the key, I've talked about that for quite some time as well, the importance of keeping your composure. Super, super critical as really the most important aspect, because if you don't keep your composure, the rest of it is, you know, worthless. But just not getting angry, not getting upset, even when they're being nasty, when you just ask something, hey, I'm trying to be a valuable asset of the company. That's why I was hired. I'm trying to make sure that I'm following company procedure. What's incorrect about that? Even when they respond with a hateful attitude about that, even then, because the same thing, like I said at the beginning of the program, the race soldier not speaking back, that's not grounds to get upset. That's not grounds to, you know, curse anybody out. You ask about the training and they get huffy, stay calm. Might have to go ask some more questions. Definitely document if, you know, there seems like they're trying to prohibit you from getting training, but stay calm, do your breathing, ask more questions. Big advocate of doing the electronic asking of these questions. That way you can create your own little digital archive of this conversation and a record of you requesting training that was denied or ignored or whatever they did to make sure that you didn't get the necessary training to do your job well. But document, keep your composure, keep asking questions, and just recognizing this is standard operating procedure. It's, you know, millions of Black people, I would suspect, all over the world who are going through the exact same thing in a variety of job situations where they are deliberately not being trained, set up for failure.
Right. And Gus, I just wanted to say one thing. You had me cracking up. I was listening to the archives with the your yoga saga. With the what was he? What you called her? The chubby heifer, episode, yeah. When you were talking about the yoga instructor.
Yes, there have been white women at the yoga studio. There have been a treasure trove of them over the past 7 months, but the tubby one from way back when, yes.
I'll mute my line. Thank you, Gus.
Yes, ma'am. Context of white supremacy. Lots of terrorism on the yoga mat over the past 7 months now. But before I nab next few folks who dialed in with a hand up, I did want to say the male caller who wrote in with the filing cabinet situation, great job of not getting same thing that I just spoke about in terms of composure. Outstanding job. This was when the white suspected racist white female, she came and said, are you trying to break into the filing cabinet? Composure, question. And I said consistently, taking all accusations seriously in the workplace. I don't care what it is. If are you stealing erasers? Are you stealing that paper? Anything. Take them seriously. I do not kid, joke about accusing Black people of wrongdoing in a workplace environment. I've just seen where whites get real serious about the most minuscule of things, and it can be a matter of seconds. Question, why would I need to break into a filing cabinet? And then she tries to make it seem like, oh, you know, just joking. That sort of nothing to laugh about, not a snicker, not a smile. Might even be time for another question. Have any filing cabinets been broken into on the job? That might be something important to know. I need to, you know, guard my property a little closer. People are breaking into our property here on the workplace. Any of those sort of accusations, I do not chalk that up as anything funny. I would not laugh. I would be deadly serious. And I might want to even write that down and let them see that I am writing that down. Date, time, asked if I was breaking into filing cabinet. and just to have that reputation as being very serious. I think whites, they like to do those sort of degrading statements where they get to kind of imply that you're some sort of criminal or drug addict or whatever. I think we had the, it was a male caller they called in before and were saying, oh, you're such a player or a pimp. I think that's what it was, saying you were a pimp and trying to make it seem like that was a term of endearment. Anything that is leading towards criminalizing you in the workplace, that's not the type of language. That's not the way that I want to be thought of when it's bonus time, when it's raise time. if I want a vacation time, that I'm thought of as, oh, the nigga that was breaking into the filing cabinet. No. Other folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have commentary, line should be open. Proceed.
Good evening. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Good evening, guys. Good evening, everyone else. I'd like to, this is a workplace racism example. It's involving food. So I decided to, every now and then, I decided to cook at home, and I cooked a, I guess, a cuisine from another country, a non-white country. And I cooked this, I cooked it at home the night before work, and then I brought leftovers for lunch the next day. So I'm in the break room or the lunch room, heating my food up, and then my suspected racist white supervisor comes in and says, that smells good. What is it? So I tell him the dish. It's a Filipino dish, so a non-white, non-black dish. And so I made the dish. And we have I have several Filipino coworkers that work there with me. So he says, yes, this smells good. That smells great. And then just so happened, one of my female Filipino coworker just walked in as I told him, hey, this is what I cook. He says, oh, look at you. As soon as you hear, you know, the name of this dish, you come running in. Ha, 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 ha. And he starts, you know, laughing about that. That's one example. I have a black male coworker that I work with. We are the only two black people there, and we're both male, of course. So he's in a tragic arrangement or a so-called relationship with a white female, and he likes to joke with a, we have a white, young white female coworker, and he talks to her quite a bit, I'm in my room working, and I hear them, they're just outside my door, and they're having a conversation about something, and I overhear him telling her, yeah, that's like, it's like Henry T. Ford. So I don't know what they were, if they were talking about cars, or I don't know what they were talking about. It didn't relate to our job. And she says, oh, okay. And he said, yeah, you know, he stole all of his ideas from a black man. And she's like, oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's interesting. And this white female is in a tragic arrangement, too. She's suing a non-white black male, too. She's actually married to this guy. But I kind of found it interesting that she was kind of, you know, just kind of, I don't know, placating to him or just like, oh, yeah, that, I didn't know that. And another incident with this black male, he asked me for some advice about, you know, I'm a former military guy, and he's in the military now. I'm not in the military anymore. So I give him some advice on how to make rank. And I try to give him all the tidbits, all the stuff that really assisted me in making rank. So I tell him all this. I spend maybe a good, 20 minutes just going over some things with him. And cool, no problem at that point. And then I guess I go up to the reception area. He's sitting there talking to the white female, suspected racist. He's talking to her, and he's like, oh, he's referring to me, oh, Mr. So-and-so, hey, can you teach her the same stuff that you teach me? You taught me? Can you teach her the same stuff? I don't want to help white people. But I kind of feel like I don't want to say I'm ashamed to say it, but I helped her. But, you have to be careful when you're, just giving out good, I guess, constructive information. I'm glad that he got it, but the fact that he's in a tragic arrangement and he's very, very, very white identified, you have to be careful if you're trying to, I guess, withhold any constructive information from white people. You know, they may, the black person may go off and, of course, tell the white person the info. And lastly, again, there's a lot of things with these same people. No, actually, the last thing I'd like to sort of share is, so we all take turns emptying the trash for the entire building. And this week is my week to do it. And I did it today. And as I walk up, the same young white female says, "Hey, Mr. So-and-so, it seems like you're always taking out the trash, you know. Are they just putting you on there?" And, you know, she giggles. And I said, "Does it really seem that way?" And she was like, "Yeah, you're always taking out the trash." And then the same black male says, "Yeah, brother, you know, they always got the black man, you know, taking out the trash. We got to find out what's going on, man. You always got the black man doing this thing. Bro, we need to have a meeting about this." And I don't know who's to blame for all this. And then there was the white female and another white male that was sitting in the same area. In unison, they say, "Of course, it's white people." And then everybody just start, I mean, with the exception of me, I'm not laughing, but people are laughing. There's a non-white, non-black, I guess a so-called Hispanic female that's up there, and she was laughing very loud, and everyone's just having a great time, and I just walked away and emptied the trash. But that's all I have to share. Thanks for letting me participate.
I got disconnected for a brief second, but I am reconnected now. I got disconnected right after the punchline, thankfully, so I got in the laugh when the cackling suspected racists said in unison, "It's white people," in terms of their conclusion for who was to blame about the trash situation. That disconnect, it even messed up my sound clip. I was all ready to go, and it threw off my timing. That's been another pattern all day today.
Black brother, hell.
There we go. Any opportunity that I can get to besmirch all of that black brother and sister talk, I have got to take advantage. Did I hear that correctly, that there was a victim of racism who did join in to say, yes, they always got the brother taken out the trash. We got to get to the bot. Did I hear that correctly before I got disconnected?
That is correct, Gus, and he's in a tragic arrangement.
Yes. Yes, that's what I thought. That's why I'm not a fan of that under any circumstances from whites or non-whites. Now, that said, I don't think you have anything to be ashamed of. I think that's black self-respect, what you did trying to share information with another victim to help him as best he could to make rank. And particularly, he asked. I mean, he was looking for help, and you provided. I think that's black self-respect. That's exactly. I think Dr. Welsing would encourage that. If anything, it reminded me of Neely Fuller Jr., producejustice.com. Folks, if you need a code book or word guide, both. Where he has said that in a system of white supremacy, non-white people cannot keep secrets from whites, that you know, should be something that we keep in mind in terms of how we go about our business, the business of counter-racism, that I think is generally, we'll think, you know, white people spying on us and that sort of thing, or they already know. But also, just in terms of that flow of information, the tendency is that non-white people, that's what we do. We take that information directly, indirectly, back to racists a lot of times anyway. So I think Mr. Fuller says that anything that you share with another non-white person, hey, you are all right with them sharing it with the world, anything. So if it's constructive information, gossip, anything that you open up your mouth to tell another non-white person, just assume that that's going to be shared with everybody in the known universe, and nothing you can do about that. If it's constructive information, great. I don't think that's anything incorrect. I certainly understand not wanting to help white people and the time and energy. If you had to go spend time with a white person to share this information like that, not cool. But and I think other people have kind of ran into that problem in the workplace as well, where they wanted to share constructive information with a non-white person. But I don't want to say were hesitant, but it was something that they did think about, like, oh man, if I go share this information with a non-white person and then they're going to go run and share it with white people. I think it was about the book 48 Laws of Power recently, but just my rule in general, I would say if it's constructive information, I think we should share. If it's a non-white person, and I wouldn't even give caveats in the workplace, because that might be the sort of thing that, you know, a confused victim might go and rat you out to other whites. If you share it and say, hey, don't share this with white people, I think a lot of victims, that right there might be enough to get them to go and tell on you. So black self-respect, sharing the information, and great illustrations of how white identified victims can unfortunately involve themselves in situations and make things a little bit more unpleasant in the workplace. But keep your composure, even with those tacky situations, keep your composure. I would make note of what was said, and nothing to be alarmed or surprised about in the system of white supremacy in that exchange, brother.
Gus, may I add something really quickly?
Yes, sir.
I gave her this advice and these tips, and she ended up being meritoriously advanced in rank like the next week. She got it. Quite frankly, I'm not in that business anymore to monitor or evaluate her work, her work ethic, but I don't see why she would get advanced meritoriously, but all the advice that I gave her, she doesn't need it. She plans on getting out of the military, and she just made rank. So it's like I wasted my time, and they gave her this promotion, and I honestly don't see why. But that's it. Thank you.
White women, the other victims on the planet, so they say. Context of white supremacy, number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Haven't I said the food thing ever since? I think it was years ago when Mr. Ken Steele made that comment about food might be a safe area of discussion where racists don't get tacky. And I think we've heard so many food incidents. You can just add that one to it. That's why I've exercised some caution, or encouraged at least, you know, some caution around the food thing, especially if it's going to be something that might have a strong aroma, might be inviting tacky moments. Racists love to take advantage of that to poke some good old fun if they think you got some good Negro victuals or some other non-white people's food, ethnic cuisine, as they call it. Other folks, if you have a hand up, if we've not heard from you, line should be open. Feel free.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Greetings, retired firefighter.
Greetings, everyone. I kind of like heard some of the report from the last caller, and he probably already knows what I'm about to say, but just be very aware that white people are looking for your reaction if they're laughing. Keep a straight face. If you don't chuckle along with him, then that would be the best means for them to not to repeat. They may repeat it, but if they don't get a reaction from you that confirms their shenanigans, then they probably would eventually over time be discouraged from continuing that sort of behavior, because they constantly look for those type of instances in workplace. You know, the tactic probably is, I think it comes to the point where is that attacking the trashy point when they do that. And then last but not least, of course, that would open up the terrorism, such as what I've mentioned on the program before, situation where the firefighter had testicles on his forehead. You know, so not saying it would happen in your workplace, but it could be something equivalent. Yeah, just, you know, be aware of your demeanor in that situation. Courteous, but yet professional. Don't even break your face as far as they're concerned to enter into any type of laughter along with them. Because that does, as I think, confirms for them that it's okay with him that we say and do these type of things. That's all I'm saying.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Your laughter, they will say that confirms that you understood this to be humorous and all in good-natured tomfoolery. That is exactly the way that they will take it. So certain control those nonverbals, your face, where you're not chuckling at all. Straight face, be serious anytime anything like that occurs. I agree completely. Other folks who have dialed in, if you have a hand up, if we've not heard from you, if you have commentary you want to share, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Is this Rob in Wisconsin?
Yes, sir. Greetings, Gus.
Greetings.
Greetings to the callers and the listeners on the line. Starting out, I wanted to respond to the cold sneezing with not covering the mouth. And the question I have, with that strategy, would that be considered not being courteous? And then I just had a report from the classroom, economics class, a non-white, non-black professor classified as an Iranian. We were going over the chapter of inequality and poverty. And after the information was presented, I asked a question and I stated that it was, I asked if he knew information that was, how I want to say, was he aware of information that was contrary to the information that he was presenting? And he said no, but then he was stated that my thoughts were radical, and it was other students in the class. And then after he stated that, he left. And when he came back, I asked, could I have a word? And I stated to him that words are very important, and me presenting information was not radical, and I would like him to state that to the class. And he did so, and that's the end of my report. Thank you.
A plus, Rob in Wisconsin. Get the public retraction. That's so important, that word, radical, or I think that's what I got called at the bookstore last year when I was just presenting factual information that substantiated what the author was talking about, Dr. Vanessa Grubbs, her work, Hundreds of Interlaced Fingers. I don't know what's quote unquote radical about submit or militant. That was the one, but I put all those together. Militant, radical, any of that. I am real cautious about those terms being used, and particularly in a classroom environment. Like, we're just asking questions and presenting information. How is that radical? Another question. Great job, though. Great job. Words are extremely important. To your first question about, is that, I guess, discourteous if you are coughing? I think in the context of the first situation where Perseverance wrote in that was the strategy that she used, where she felt like she was under sexual attack from a white male, I feel like that's an act of self-defense. I feel like the any courtesy or commitment to courtesy has already been voided by the sexual molestation, him leering at her. In the second situation, I think she said it was a suspected racist who was peppering her with questions when she used this as a tactic to stop the racist verbal onslaught. So it would seem, at least to me, my processing of those situations would be, if you are under attack, then courtesy has already been voided.
Yes, sir. I missed the first report about the sexual attack. Thank you for the clarification.
Yes, sir. Rob in Wisconsin, much obliged. The number, 641-715-3640. The code, 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. I will see if I can get in another one of the pieces that was written in from our listeners. All right, next segment, a person wrote in, my white female boss, man, got another one here. Let's see if I can do this quickly before I get too deep into the message. Let's see. Oh, I'd already moved over. I should have just done done without the sound effect on this one. I didn't know it was going to make this much. Oh, wow. Yeah, taking too long. All right, I'll do it myself. Insert cowbell. My white female boss is married to a black male and hates black. Okay, so the white female boss is married to a black male and she hates black females. She tries to enforce racial hierarchies in the department. The higher you go, no black people exist. After running off all of the black females under her, she now focuses on me. She tries to make it seem like I don't know anything. I need help with everything, etc. She tries so hard that she always sends white coworkers to explain things to me randomly. They come over to my desk and start explaining the work when I did not ask. This white woman is obsessed with me. She will pile other people's work on my desk simply so they can take 2-hour lunch breaks. Or when a white person doesn't feel like doing work, she tries to get me to do their work by calling it teamwork. Whenever a white coworker would go on vacation, she tries to get me to do their work by calling it teamwork. Whenever a white coworker would go on vacation, she would assign their files to me. When I go on vacation, she just lets the work pile on my desk. No mention of teamwork there. This lady has had my seat moved to a place where I'm directly under the air vent. She now has the AC on blast and it's freezing. I know she is doing this to get under my skin. My overall workplace is just as racist and terrible. They are now messing with my time. I finally caught on after I decided to watch it closely. I noticed my time coming up short weekly. When this happens, they take time from your PTO. I initially questioned my PTO hours. Questioned why my PTO hours were scarce. They told me some fraudulent explanation of how the time works. The only reason why my time comes up short is because weekly my manager calls me and tells me how I should clock in. It never made sense to me, but they would never argue and threaten me that their way is the right way. At this point, I am keeping all my timesheets as proof of wrongdoing. We've talked about this before. I think there have been quite a few listeners. Wage theft, time theft, where in some way they are either not crediting you for all of the hours worked or finding a way to manipulate it to make it seem like that you were on the clock for fewer hours than you actually were. Sometimes even if all of that information is correct, then they still just, you know, your compensation is not accurate. I would be very, and this is one of those where I say, be familiar with policy and procedure like your first day on the job. I would recommend even before you take the job, I think that's the best way to do it, to know the policy and procedure before you even agree to take a job. That way you know exactly what you're signing up for. But this is a situation where you do not want to be uninformed about what that particular company's policy is on paid time off, where you're stumbling and fumbling and struggling trying to get that information together now that you're stressed and trying to deal with all of this information on the fly, as they say, this is one where you want to already know what that is. You can look back at the policy and procedure just to refresh your memory to make sure that everything is correct and that they haven't changed or updated the policy. But this is one that you already want to know how all of this works so that you can accurately document what's happening, how you're being messed over, how you're being cheated out of your, you know, correct payment for the work situation. We talked about that last week. That's one where I would want documentation where you can just compare what's happening. Now, if I'm going on vacation and my work just piles up on my desk, well, how come when Ted or whomever else, they went on vacation, we pitched in with teamwork. You know, I helped out and got some of their work done so they didn't have to come back to a log jam of all of this accumulation of work. Why isn't the same thing being done for me? Is it possible that we could do something like, you can even put that in the form of a question. Is it possible that I can get the same sort of team assistance that such and such got when they've been on vacation? That's a great one. You can have exact dates and times of when they went on vacation. And, you know, if I provided the assistance, this is exactly what I did to help out while they were on vacation. Great way. Documentation, details, and just knowing things that have happened in your work environment can benefit you. I will see if folks have conditions on, if folks have suggestions on what the black female caller wrote in, the chair situation being moved. I think we've heard a lot of non-white people who talked about that, whites being vindictive and just kind of moving their seating situation around to have it so that they're placed in an inconvenient or uncomfortable location in the workplace. We've seen quite a bit of that. Again, I would make a request, particularly if it's an air conditioning thing. I've seen where racists at times might accommodate. If you could say, hey, I'm directly under the AC vent, it's possible I can get scooted, because that's something where, hey, if I can get moved a couple of feet, a few directions where I'm not directly under it, that might greatly mitigate the problem. That's something I would just ask directly if we can get that alleviated. Before I go to some of the other folks, Stacy, in the UK, I believe almost 2:20, I guess by the time I finish this, it'll be 2:20 a.m. Friday morning in the UK. Good to have you with us. Did you have commentary you wanted to share? Are you just listening for now?
Yeah, I'm just listening for now, girls. Thanks.
Good to have you with us as always. Other folks who dialed in, if you either have suggestions, in fact, we should start there. Do we have any suggestions for the female caller who just wrote in, a white woman on the job who's married to a black male has been terrorizing black females, is targeting her specifically now, giving her lots of work, more work than the other people on the job are getting white people to come and I guess give her information under the pretense that she is ignorant or doesn't know these details and needs to be informed, having her seat moved under the air conditioning. Any tips that folks would offer? If the working environment is this terroristic, this also might be one that you might want to consider how vested you are in staying in this environment, unless there's something really, really great, if the compensation or you've been there a long time, if you're close, you know, to being able to retire, I don't know what that is, or great location, whatever, unless there's something that's really, really appealing about this situation, because from what you've described, it does not sound like an environment that you would want to stay in for a long term. If you've seen that in this environment, there's been, you know, rounds of acute terrorism targeting black females specifically, that this is going on and on and on, it might not be an environment that you want to stay in long term. Not that you're going to escape racism going to a different job. Did any suggestions specifically for this person who wrote in? No suggestions. I'll ask again a little bit later in the broadcast, because I do think that is important. As I said, it might be worth considering if you want to invest in staying there long term, but at least if you're going to be there for the time being, I would definitely I would ask about getting the seat moved out of the AC. That seems like something that could be hopefully easily resolved, just, you know, getting moved a little bit, whatever you can to mitigate that. But with the rest of it, I would go about the documenting of the workload, especially. Other folks who dialed in, if you have a hand up, if you have your own situation that you want to address, or if you want to discuss any of the problems, scenarios that have been presented thus far, proceed.
Nobody here?
Yes, ma'am. Greetings, Ivy.
Greetings, Gus, and greetings to all the callers on the line. I'm sorry that I'm trying to get my earpiece together. I was trying to do that before I unmuted myself. and for the person who just wrote in, I think that your advice that you gave was brilliant, and the documentation is definitely going to be necessary, because it sounds like that, you know, that's a there's a lot of problems that sounds like harassment. I'll say this, that is harassment. Excuse me. And she might want to report that because of just, she has a lot of cumulative attacks and assaults that have been perpetrated against her. And she might, you know, want to take a page out of the caller in Florida's book, where you just lay out all the things that have been happening and ask if it would be happening if you were white. And it's also an issue of equal treatment under the law, as in terms of, you know, her being treated differently than other people. But if she doesn't want to report it right now or anything of that nature, you know, definitely documented. It sounds like she could even, you know, in the future, possibly, depending on how bad it gets, have a case for, you know, a lawsuit or anything. And as far as the clocking in and things of that nature, man, it just, I don't know, but it would seem like what you said was great in terms of learning, knowing your policy and procedure, because it seems like one of those situations where you do what's according to the policy or procedure, regardless of what someone else is telling you. Because there have been people who have done that, where they just follow procedure regardless of what anyone else has told them. I remember there was someone about, they were telling him to put equipment in a particular place, and, you know, that could have just went really bad had he followed that advice. But then at the same time, you risk insubordination depending on who is telling you this. So I don't know if you just do what they say and document it, that they're telling you to do this, and so therefore you can, if paid time off and all of that becomes a problem, you can go and present that to whoever you need to present it to for your proof, so that you can make sure that your paid time off and everything else that you're supposed to get is handled correctly. But that was my input on that. And if I didn't say so, greetings to everyone on the line. And I think I greeted Gus, but if not, greetings again, Gus. And I'm in my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Much obliged. Appreciate that. Ivy, if other folks have any suggestions about, for the female caller specifically, or a female, black female that wrote in specifically about how to deal with this white race soldier on the job who's been terrorizing her and lots of other black females, you can dial in or you can write in. I'll check the email, untiljustice@gmail.com, if you have any suggestions. Other folks, if you dialed in, if you have commentary, suggestions, if you have your own situation or comments on what's been shared thus far, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Aforementioned caller in Florida. Good to hear from you, sir.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much. As far as the black female, I was thinking about that the term, I think teamwork was used. I would also recommend putting together an email in the form of asking questions. You can use that term, and maybe you can add like a analogy to it. I don't know about being a team, and it's not iron team, right? Like, you can use that language against them. And I think that was mentioned on this program before. And I don't know how they may respond to that, but I think that would be effective. And as well as using that question, you know, would this be happening to a white person? If we're all supposed to be a team, you know, shouldn't we all be put forth a team work or a team effort or something like that? And then just try to put a series of questions together. That's what I would recommend for that. But as far as the my workplace incidents, definitely white woman dominated. Like, there's been a few incidents. I'll start out with, this happened last week. I was walking out of the front door, and there's I think this is a public defender, like an attorney or, you know, whatever. She was coming to the front door. So, you know, she spoke to me, and I had spoke to her back. And then she says, Adrian, I guess this is some young person, you know, he'll be up in court at 9 a.m. You know, you should come by and see him. I have no idea what she was talking about. I can only conclude that she was making an incorrect racist association with me and the court system. I don't know if she was assuming that was maybe my relative or some kind of offspring or something up in the juvenile, because it was on a Wednesday, and the juvenile hearings take place at 9 a.m. So it's at this point was like 8:40 a.m. and I had to go do a job. So definitely act of racism, white woman. The second one was, we have a younger white woman who apparently has she came in on last Tuesday, because I've been out this week, so I'm sharing some things from last week. So she came in on Tuesday morning very upset. So, you know, I had spoke courtesy good morning, or, you know, morning or whatever, and she said, you know, good morning, and she just comes off and she says that, oh man, I had a real bad night. You know, I broke up with my boyfriend, and then, you know, she says, and it's the two other black females weren't in there at the time, so she says not that I don't trust telling them. She says, I think you're more open-minded. So, you know, she's just talking, and she says that I don't know what the term is, polyamorous, I don't know, some kind of relationship. And I guess this white boyfriend of hers been having multiple partners. I'm like, what is this? So she basically summarized it and said that he been sleeping around, and he been on this app or whatever, and she's been concerned about, you know, contracting some kind of STD or something, and she needed to, you know, go and, I guess, get tested or whatever. Now, this is the reason I'm sharing this, because she omitted that she blamed her boyfriend when she told the other white people and the two other black people or black females, because we have a female dominated workplace. So she omitted that part and blamed him. And she says she's been having partners too. Now, you know, that ain't none of my business. And that don't affect, at least I don't think it affects victims, because, you know, that's white conflict, in my opinion. But, you know, I documented that, and I wanted to share that because she definitely showed her ability to be deceitful. That now, that's why, you know, I wanted to note it, because she could utilize that towards me or, you know, towards other black people. And, yeah, she left work on that Friday because she got an appointment. She said, yeah, it looks like he may have been with 12 people, and she was getting all this sympathy. She got the whole department galvanized and being emotionally attached to her. You know, I feel so bad and sorry. So yeah, she left early to go get tested. I left after last Friday, so I never found out the conclusion of that. And the warden, I had a few more, well, maybe one or two more incidents before I sent my email. I was sitting in a break room come 3 p.m. before I do the mail processing. A white woman comes into the break room, and, you know, she's speaking to me or whatever. She came to have a conversation with me. And, you know, I know her, like, I think her husband just passed away not too long ago. So she, I guess, goes and gets something out of the vending machine. And the white woman, professional racist, that is a term I made up, but she goes to the machine, gets a Diet Coke, okay? And this is very conscious. She comes to the table. She says, yeah, I was looking for you. And she turns around. She's like, oh, is she talking to you? I was like, nah, I think she might be talking to you. And she comes to sit down in the middle of our conversation. We was talking about something, you know, about work. And then, now this is the personnel lady. Rudely interrupted our conversation. And what I noticed was that also at the same time, the news was on. And it was Maxine Waters, a black female. They were talking about, I guess, something, you know, that was occurring with her on the news. And she looks back and she says, oh my gosh, I'm just so sick and tired of this. And I had the remote close to my hand because, you know, we can watch cable TV, you know, on breaks, lunch breaks. You know, there's nothing wrong with that. So I know what it was. She associated the image on TV with me. And I'm not blaming the victim. I'm pointing out her racism. And she gave me the most coldest blank stare as we continued to have our conversation. So she contributed comments to the white woman. And anytime I attempted to make a comment, she was unresponsive to what I was saying, but she was responding to what the white woman said. And she was looking at me as though she wanted me to leave. So I guess they could talk about something more personally. But me and her were having the conversation. Initially, she came to me, but I had to go do a job, so I got up and I left. So retaliation, another act, in my opinion, racist. And one thing, last thing, Gus, I think another act was when the two other white men, he sent me an email and he said that, hey, you know, your promotion, we're going to try to get this in he didn't say try. He said, we're going to get this in the newsletter. And, you know, logically speaking, this white woman has control over the newsletter. She produces it. So apparently she didn't put my picture with the clerk of the office. She apparently refused to put it in there. But he sent me the email, so that's documented proof that I was forewarned that I was going to be in this newsletter, but wasn't put in there. But the recent one that just came out this week, apparently, has a high amount of black people in it. And I reported this a couple of weeks ago that they were going to put the children in there from the Bring Your Children to Work Day, and this is what they did. They put images of them taking pictures with the judges and just about every black person in the office. So I wanted to report that about the newsletter, and more racism still continues to thrive, unfortunately. And that's all I have to share right now. Thank you, sir.
That is amazing. That is such, I mean, that is a whole report just right there, their use of the newsletter. Like, that's a whole lesson in racism. Like, when Mr. Fuller says, racists go to the bottom of the ocean, study a grain of sand. Ralph, while you're studying that grain of sand, figure out everything that I possibly can about what it is, what it does, how I can use it to dominate you. Even this raggedy newsletter right here. Fourth time. Is that right? This was going to be your fourth time in the newsletter?
This is going to be the fourth one.
All black people, or not all, you can say all, but lots, super melanated issue of the newsletter, summer of 2018. He had pre-warned us about the Bring Your Children to Work Day, where they had all these black children there. And then they go and round up all the black people that they possibly can in the office. We don't have nothing but niggers working at the courthouse in Florida. Hardly have a white person here. Only white person here is a janitor. Black people run the courthouse down in Florida. Total nonsense under the system of white supremacy. But everything gets deliberately used for their purposes. I'm sure there was a time where they operated the newsletter. You wouldn't have a single black person in there at all for any reason. Maybe if they committed a crime, going to be executed, we got a death row or a lynching of some sort. But other than that, no, it's not going to be any niggers in the newsletter. Now we can't keep him out of there. We got, he should have his own little column in the newsletter. What you did this week, what you said this week, promotions, any other thoughts you have about courthouse activity. Even going back before the new, but I mean, that is fascinating. I cannot emphasize that enough. Just that one aspect alone in terms of how you can control. And I mean, just how that impacts people's thinking, the reason for that. I don't know how many people, if that newsletter goes out to like, does the newsletter go out to people beyond the courthouse, or is that just like an internal thing, or?
I think, can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
I think they possibly send it to certain people outside of the courthouse. I don't think it extends that far. Maybe certain people with the county. Maybe I'm thinking they also are sending it to the previous clerk, who I think is the grand mastermind behind a lot of what's going on, because these are his peers who are behaving this way. He put them in there after decades, and I think they're starting to crumble a little bit because they are very unstable, emotionally unstable. And I think he was the force, the main force behind how to be that politician, and knows how to still can be very, I guess, direct and professional how he speaks to people. But these people who he's left behind just can't really get it done like that. But I wanted to share one last thing, Gus. I think this is important too. The clerk, I was reported by a black female. There was an incident last Friday where the clerk, he's been bringing in groups of kids or children to tour the courthouse. And apparently the black female was told by her, another black female coworker, that he came to the front counter and she's in child support. And the clerk, he addressed to the children that, you know, this is the child support front counter. This is where all your mommies and daddies come to. He possessive term said all of your mommies and daddies come to handle their court strife and issues and things like that. So she, I talked to her yesterday after they got off of work, and she reported that one to me. I wanted to share that too.
Doesn't get any better than tacky. See if that ends up in the newsletter, their visit to the courthouse. Maybe that'll be in the August issue. Negro children have taken over the courthouse in Florida. They run everything. The portion I wrote notes down, there were so many incidents, as is normally the case at the courthouse. The suspected racist who's in, I had never heard that term before. Basically, where you, it sounds like some sort of open, just have sexual intercourse with as many folks as you feel like, and, you know, whatever you're doing. I cannot imagine a scenario. Any place that I've worked, and I don't think any black male or black female can imagine a scenario anywhere in your work history where you could go to work and openly weep. Well, let's not say weep. Openly complain and express your concern, anxiety about the fact that you and your partner's open, I forgot the term, I should have wrote it down. You and your partner's open relationship, where your partner is got maybe 12 different other sexual partners. You've had a few yourself, and you're worried if you have contracted some sort of STD and just trying to get through the day. I cannot imagine a scenario where a black person, male or female, would be comforted, soothed. We're so sorry you're going through this. Baked you a sweet potato pie. Like, I cannot. I don't even think I could be in a work situation with a lot of black people, and I don't think I would get any sort of sympathy. Like, I don't, you all can let me, I don't think so. Just that alone. Wow. The other aspect of that same situation, the tackiness of that, like, I cannot, same vein, I cannot imagine a situation where a white woman would, like, entertain me telling her about all of this. Like, I feel like that right there might be a report of sexual harassment that he thought I wanted to hear all of the, like, yeah, I feel like that right there alone might be grounds for you getting written up for sexual harassment in the workplace. Like, I would, to the best of my ability, I would strive to make it so that whites do not tell me any sort of information of that sort. Like, that can be very, very difficult in the workplace. I'd bold face print everything I just, that last sentence. That can be very difficult in the workplace. But to the best of my ability, I would really make an effort. Like, once it veers to your marital problems, sexual infidelity, any of that, like, whoa, there should be some boundaries about what we discuss in a professional work environment. And I think it's just in my, I think frequently whites, they will, delectable Negro hasn't been mentioned recently. I think a form of racism, white supremacy, is they will use us. They will take up our time and energy. It's a kind of a drawing of psychic energy. It was talked about in Delectable Negro, of just kind of psychic vampirism, of sucking your life force out. And I'll tell you about all of my problems, and I can tell you this, and you should entertain and listen or feel sorry or whatever it is. It's like, whoa, I would not be afforded that same opportunity. I might be fired, chastised, scolded, looked down upon for the rest of my time here. Like, no, like, this, to the best of my ability, I would try to resist that, even though, again, that can be very, that might be a situation where you cough. We already got that from Perseverance. Maybe that's what to do. When they start up with that, cough on them and see if that stops them in between all of that. Because that's one, like, hey, I came to work. I did not come to hear about your trashy sexual perversions. And if any folks have suggestions, if you have gotten good, because I think that's that is a long run. I can remember that from my workplace, and I've seen it happen to other black people. And if anybody has figured out any patterns on how to get that sort of thing to stop, that would be great. Was that your feeling around all of that? Like, hey, this in terms of just sensing that this is incorrect, her telling me all of this information in the first place?
expected it to be incorrect. I guess because it hadn't really never like took place like that in that kind of context. Because usually the other two black females, they're usually there. It was pretty much close to 8 o'clock, 8 a.m. But this particular morning, they weren't there. So I guess she just thought it up to express it to me in that way. But see, she withheld that from the other women in there. And so I'm like, she said, well, you know, that, well, she, I guess she said it was polyamorous. Or I don't know. It maybe that's the term. Poly something, P-O-L-Y. I know that was the first part of word to it. And she was telling them that she had a breakup with him and he was cheating on her. But she omitted everything else. And to add this, she said she received a subpoena, I guess, for... a rape incident that occurred across the street. And I guess she was supposed to be some kind of a witness and something about, I guess she was supposed to be like a character witness about a person who followed her the previous day before the sexual assault happened. The lady didn't get raped. But she was saying, well, you know, I just don't even know if I'm going to be able to identify the person. So what it is they just want a white woman to say a black person committed a sexual assault or a rape or something. And she can't even remember what the person looks like, I guess. Can't even positively identify the person. And this all happened in the same week.
Context of white supremacy. Again, white women are also allegedly victims in this here system. Did you have a commentary, Stacey, or you just suggesting your audio equipment?
Yeah, but only if you finished that conversation, sorry.
If you had a question or a comment, or we're going
to... Oh, yeah, I was literally going to say, and sorry, hello to you and the rest of the callers. I was actually just going to say to the last caller that I would, if she ever comes back, because to me that just sounds like she was almost attempting to, you know, I don't know, it seems like there's an element of flirting going on in there as well. You know, she may well have gone through that situation with her boyfriend. However, you know, that whole statement, I'm going to share this with you because you seem to be more open-minded with the others. Yeah, that just sounds like she's trying to ingratiate herself. And I would just give some very neutral responses. In other words, don't respond when she comes with these stories because that sounds like an extremely dangerous female with intentions, and either way, you just don't want to bring in those kind of stories to you, and you never know when she will start to claim harassment on you after she's started to tell this, her stories, or even regretted telling her story. But I'll mute my line there, Gus.
That's a good point there as well, or I guess two good points at minimum about that could be some sort of low-key flirtatious thing, since we got our polyamorous situation here, that you could be involved in this here thing too. That long record of that also detailed in The Delectable Negro. I also think the point at the end in terms of sometimes whites, they will share with a nigra and then get embarrassed that they shared with the nigra, and then it's got to be some sort of retaliation because they feel some sort of shame about it. And you could even tie that, if, you know, Stacey is two for two, if it's some sort of sense that, you know, you rejected her covert proposal, and, you know, some sense of shame, and maybe I shouldn't have told this nigra all that, you know, you never know that either. That's why, I'm a big, highly suggest any, if it seems like it could be heading in that direction, like, ooh, get out immediately. Like, I would not want it to be at all established as a pattern that I'm acceptable, open to anything relating to this sort of dialogue, like workplace conversations only. This is totally inappropriate for the workplace. Gotta go. Back to watching Congresswoman Maxine Waters. Let me get that. What do you think? Covert sexual proposal? Is that lunacy or does that seem possible? You experienced this, caller in Florida.
I did think about it in that aspect, that she was trying to, share that with me, and also trying to put forth the notion that I have a series of female partners. Like, hey, you know, you're open-minded about this kind of stuff. Well, I think you're open-minded about this. So I didn't say anything. I just let her just go ahead and just finish talking, because not too long after that, the other black female walked in and she, you know, was telling them, and they were all talking about it. And supervisor, she shortly after that, she started expressing this to the rest of the female coworkers. So they were pretty much sympathizing and giving her empathy and all that kind of stuff.
To be expected in a system of white supremacy. If folks have any suggestions on, you know, how to, the best way to deal with that sort of commentary, because I feel even if it's not that specific, like, you know, my husband's sleeping with 13 other females that we know of, the whites do a lot of that in workplace, even beyond the workplace, but that's what we're talking about here in the workplace setting, and in terms of using black people to talk about whatever their woes, highly inappropriate conversations a lot of time, to just talk and suck the energy and sympathy out of you. If folks have experienced that in the workplace, or really what I'm looking for, if folks have figured out this is a great tactic to totally neutralize that, to get out. If it's getting up to go to the bathroom, phone call, coughing on the person without covering your mouth, tactics for neutralizing that without creating new problems would be appreciated. Other folks, if we have folks that we've not heard from at all who have a hand up.
Can I be heard?
Greetings, codified software developer in Wisconsin.
Greetings, guests. Greetings to all the callers and listeners. I have experienced that with white coworkers, where they will come and give you unnecessary information or speak to you about things that are inappropriate for the workplace. I normally just ask the question, do you think this is appropriate for the workplace? That seems to stop people dead in their tracks. I've found in general just asking questions is the best way to neutralize a lot of these situations. A lot of times white people make these grand statements, and they don't expect to be questioned by non-white people. So when you ask them a question, it's sort of like throwing a virus into a computer, so to speak. You know, you just stop it from doing whatever it was programmed to do. So I found that very useful. In fact, I had this one situation. There's this white male at my job who likes to complain about the way things are managed, and he likes to talk about how poorly the managers are doing their jobs, or these decisions that were made were stupid decisions. And so he's going on and on about this. And I just said, well, what do you think should be done? And it was just radio silence. He started stuttering and he just couldn't gather his thoughts, and he was just quiet. So I find that questions throw them off. But that would be my question. Do you think this is appropriate for the workplace? Because obviously it's not, and I don't think anybody would say that it was, you know. As far as my own situation, So I've called in before about this non-white Indian male at my job who's on my team and has been there for about 20 years. He's been there for, you know, since he was in his early 20s. And he's been around for a while. He's done some things that we would consider uncodified. He's gone out to, you know, drinking with these people and golf outings and things of that nature. And so they know how to push his buttons. And so they do this quite constantly.
Let's see. Codified software developer, are you with us? Codified software developer, are you with us? We're not hearing you.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
You went out.
I pressed the button.
Oh, okay. You last okay. thing we heard,
I go out.
You said that he does some things that we would consider uncodified, like going out to drinks with them.
Yes, going out to drinks with them, going out on golf outings, which they have one today. And he is, you know, they've learned how to push his buttons. So very recently, I think I've shared this. I had a project that needs to be done very quickly, and they sort of put me on this project, and it got done. There's another project that also needs to be done very quickly, and he has a great deal of experience. He's been there for 20 years, so he knows a great deal of the code base. He knows how the system works, and so you would think that he would be the person that would do this project. It's not like the project that I had where it was a brand new thing that had never been done before. And usually I get pulled on to things like that. But when there are projects that are sort of fitting into the system that we already have, he would be the best person to go to. And so he said that he would do that. You know, he said that he was willing to, well, he actually volunteered himself. He said, I know this work and I know what to do. And I can do this. And so he goes out for 3 days. And there's another project he's been working on that's taking him a long time. And the reason why it's taking him a long time is because he's overcomplicated the project. Because he's, this is my opinion, he's allowing them to get to him, allowing, you know, sort of questioning his skill. And so he's trying to overcompensate by creating these very complicated solutions to things that are creating more problems. I think I discussed this last week when I said, you know, we want to conserve, you know, we want to do things efficiently and effectively, and the way he's doing things now, of course, is not very efficient because he's just confusing himself. So while he was out for these past 3 days, there was a lot of talk amongst the manager and the business analyst and the architect while we were in meetings about, whether he could do the job or not. Some criticism of him, you know, I just stayed silent, and then they would look at me, and I guess they were looking at me to see if I would say, oh, well, I can do the project. Well, I'm not going to do that. Number one, because I don't want any conflict with this non-white Indian male who I generally get along with, and I don't want any conflict with non-white people in general or with people, period. And number two, because I'm not going to do your dirty work for you. You want me to take the project, then you need to say I need to take the project instead of, you know, being so passive aggressive with it and just sort of making these snide comments about him. So I've been sort of in this black self-respect space where they make these snide comments. I have no emotion. I have nothing to say about it, no commentary to say or anything, and I just let them make their snide comments, and I keep it moving. So I'm going to see how this situation pans out, because he still hasn't started this project because he's still involved in some other work that he was doing before. I actually have the time to start this project, but I'm not going to because he said he could do it, and I believe that he can. So that's that situation. With that, I'll mute my line. Thanks for letting me share.
Much obliged, our codified software developer in Wisconsin. I think that's a really important observation in terms of this is a non-white, non-black male victim of white supremacy. And you were saying that they, race soldiers on your job, can kind of undermine his confidence, abilities to where now he's overcomplicating these programs. And I think that happens to a lot of us, victims of white supremacy or whites. They are constantly eroding our black self-respect, our self-esteem, our self-confidence, to where we question ourselves, we doubt ourselves, we second-guess ourselves. They do this all the time. That is huge. That is one of the core reasons why Dr. Welsing, she emphasized as a third-generation physician, black self-respect, knowing that this is constantly what they're gnawing away at on a regular basis to just erode our sense that the Creator endowed us with brilliance that can be manifested in, you know, a myriad of different ways. That no, you're ignorant, you don't know what you're doing, you're gonna mess that up, you can't do this constantly. And one of the other major have-tos that Dr. Welsing also talked about, and Mr. Fuller, keeping non-white people in conflict with one another, to just talk bad about this non-white male, same part of the apparatus, eroding his self-confidence and our collective black self-respect, but talk bad about him. So then you'll jump it. Oh, yeah, I'll do it. I can do it. No problem. I get that finished way. I think you had a ratio. I think we should, the ratio that you shared with us before, you can correct me if I'm wrong, was 70%, about 70%. Of your effort to get things done, be efficient, be effective. But we are not, you know, trying to kill ourselves on these jobs. And I mean, that's the sort of situation that they love. If you, you know, be willing to volunteer, like, yes, I'm going to kill myself and I'll take this project and do it upright, show them I can do great work, that, oh, yeah, well, codified software developer, she took your project. And then have him, as you said, be upset with you, and where you all at least have a courteous working relationship where they can erode that, have you all in conflict, see if they can get you against each other. They love that sort of thing. So I think that's a great job. Black self-respect, just, I have nothing to say. I'm sure you all will figure it out. And if you want me to have this project, you all can go through, you know, the correct means of making that happen. I think that's excellent. And great suggestion about using a question with that whole situation when whites, they're coming up to share this unwarranted and unprofessional information. Is this acceptable for the workplace? Great way, great use of a question to neutralize workplace racism. Other folks dialed in, if you have a question, commentary, if you have your own situation, or if you have thoughts on what's been shared thus far, feel free. I think we got, did we get everybody who dialed in with a hand up? Did we miss anybody who has a hand up? Okay, assume we got everybody with a hand up. Any of the folks who dialed in with a hand up, if you have thoughts, commentary, feel free.
I guess.
No, go ahead, Stacey. I'll go after you.
Okay, thank you, Ivy. Actually, just one other thought for the person in the Florida courthouse. I'm not quite sure what the statement would be, but I would try to weave in something about hashtag Me Too, in a sense using it as a way of defending himself, that he feels quite anxious about this matter, given the current situation, and then hopefully that would neutralise her, certainly from the perspective of him being a male and not wanting to say anything or that could be perceived in that way, whatever. But yeah, maybe if there was a way of weaving hashtag Me Too into the discussion. I wanted to give my update. I don't know if people remember, but probably at the beginning or around the beginning of the year, I had fed back around about the activities in the workplace to develop a BAME, so Black and Ethnic Minority, or Minority Ethnic Network, and other ways of supporting more Black staff in the organisation or non-white staff to progress, allegedly. And I had outlined a framework for activities that could be undertaken. And this had been initiated by a roundtable that had been led by a non-white male who is a group director And the initial plan was for me to feed this information back to him and for him to determine the next steps on this. In the interim period, for me pulling together those ideas, the non-white staff shared it with others, I'm sure people in human resources and others, and the information was then used to start developing a model for supporting gender progression within the organisation. And as we all know, gender networks are a code for supporting more white women, and rather than all women, in my opinion, at least. Anyway, so in the interim period since I've been away, they started to promote the BAME network, having undertaken a survey and to assess whether a non-white staff in the organisation were interested. And initially when I was involved, I wasn't engaging with HR, or rather involving HR in those initial discussions, because it was, you know, important to get non-white staff together to take forward, you know, feel comfortable about putting their ideas forward. And anyway, the non-white male who had called the initial round table, who's a group director, had not involved HR in those discussions. So all the people that I had initially connected with were had been invited to that round table. Anyway, so the HR provided a framework for how the BAME network should be managed, including requiring the chair, vice chair, and any other formal roles to go through an election process. Now, the reason I highlight that is because I saw one of the non-white males who was involved at the roundtable, who had been working with me to pull together the initial ideas, one lunchtime this week, and he hadn't seen me for a while, obviously, because I'm not in the organisation. And the first thing he said to me was, "Oh, someone told me you left." So I said, "Really? Oh, well, no." And I thought, I'm not going to say any more than that. And then he started to tell me about the activities with the network and how they had been required to go through this formal process. And it is the largest network that exists. So there is the gender network, there is also the LGBTQ network, and I'm not quite sure where they are with the disability network. There was at one point a discussion about establishing one. However, the gender network is the has been longest running, and the LGBTQ has been running for some time as well. But they, but certainly the LGBTQ one hasn't been, I don't know if it's as big as, or what, well, I was told the BAME network is the largest with 80 people who have already signed up. Now, he informed me that they had reached out to the LGBTQ network to, you know, find out a bit more about how they're operating. And so far, all of their calls are not being returned. Sorry, I'm laughing as I'm telling you. So there was already hostility. And he thinks it's because of the fact that they are, the BAME network is so large and they're getting a lot of attention from senior management, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm trying to keep a very codified, neutral response. And, you know, I say, "Oh, really? Oh, that's, okay. Oh, well, you just need to carry on." No doubt they'll reach out at some point. But what was interesting as well, he was telling me that how HR had insisted that they run the network in a very formal way. The LGBTQ network had not been required to go through an election process or have any formalized structure around it. And the gender network, which actually is run by a non-white female, and has been running for years, to date had not been required to, even though they were using a formal structure that had been agreed by HR, there was no kind of election process for the chair or anything. But more recently, because there's been so much profile for their gender activities, all of a sudden the gender network has to now go through a formalized process because it wasn't seen to be run properly. And so that I think they will be going through election and things like that. And the reason why I say this is because I believe that the non-white female who has been chairing this is the same non-white female who shared my information with HR, who I'm sure had been assigned to me to keep an eye on me and make sure I didn't step out of line. And I'd mentioned her before as the person who'd sent me inappropriate emails about how we must engage non-white women in the fight against, white women in the fight against racism, and kept bringing me stories about white women. And I had to put an end to that. And I think it's very interesting now that the activities to support gender progression in the workplace, now that that's been given such a high profile, all of a sudden that network isn't being run efficiently either, and there needs to be an election process. So we will see going forward if this non-white female gets formally elected as the chair to that network. I have a feeling she won't be. But I will mute my line there, Gus, because I've been speaking for a while. But I guess my point is that the BAME network is also being used as a weapon, very similar to the newsletter in the Florida courthouse. And they've been, given lots of encouragement, in inverted commas, from senior managers who are saying, they're ready to improve things and come to us at any time if you want our support. And, they have an action plan, which is obviously the framework that I developed. And, they've been told, oh, yes, we'll do whatever we can. We've got to improve the things for non-white staff in the organisation. And, I'm looking at this black male as he's speaking, and I'm thinking, are you really that naive? And he's actually a senior manager. And, he's a really nice person, so I'm not being critical. But I just sensed an awful lot of confusion. I've been told, we need people like you on board, whatever. I'm just being very, very neutral. He's also seeing the irony, and this is why he was relaying it back to me, that all of a sudden the BAME network has to have a formal structure around it. And it was all right to be loose beforehand, but now that we've got all of these ethnics energized, we need to manage this. So they are being encouraged to do lots of superficial events like activities around Black History Month, etc. And again, I think he realized that was just opportunities for photos for senior management. But I'll mute my line, Gus, and I'll come back if there's more time for other updates.
Much obliged, Stacy in the UK. 3:16 a.m. Friday morning, London time. That is BAME, Black and Minority Ethnic, if my global understanding of racist terms is at least mediocre for folks who do not understand. And I think just so many aspects of that, the LGBT group and the gender group, whites are phenomenal at that sort of shenanigans, where sometimes it'll be that they get tons of funding. It won't just be that they won't have to have the same rules and organization and be all formal about it. They'll get, $8 billion to organize all their activities. And the Black people or the BAME group, they have to have a cookie sale or something to see if they can do anything. But lots of different ways that they can go about organizing. I think I remember when you had shared with us before, I think this stretches back more than a year, But you're talking about the black female who was sending you the emails about we need to reach out to our white sisters. Confusion is lethal. Seeing that illustrated in both ways, being confused where racists can more easily use you to maintain their system, or confusion where you don't have correct expectations about what's going to happen with these types of groups or events if racists are involved directly or indirectly, and just knowing that this is probably not going to work out to solve any serious problems, that racists are going to make sure any good intentions are undermined. Confusion is lethal. And unfortunately, most non-white people all over the world do not understand racism, white supremacy, what it is, how it works, what it means to be white. Much obliged for yielding the floor. Ivy, did you have commentary?
Yes, sir. I wanted to ask the codified software developer. Well, first I wanted to say that, you know, I definitely agree with you, Gus, that her commentary was great. And just that question about, is this appropriate for the workplace? Just, you know, brilliant. What can you say to that? Well, my question is there any way that you can help, I believe it's the Indian male, without compromising your codification or compromising yourself or your job or any of that, helping him with the projects and even helping him with the psychological struggles that he's dealing with in terms of overcompensating and overcomplicating everything because he's kind of stressed and all of that. And just, you know, hey, you can, you don't have to, you don't have to overcompensate, and just give him whatever type of, you know, great advice that you tend to give, and helping him with these projects as well. Just wanting to know if that is feasible at all without you compromising your code or yourself or your job in any way. And that was my question. I'll mute my line.
Oh, okay. Can I be heard good?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. I've tried to discuss with him. The best way to do it is in code reviews, when we're actually looking at what he's written, and just sort of ask questions about what he's written and why he's written it that way, and emphasizing the sort of complicated structures that he's been using and how that can be problematic later on when we're trying to fix any issues that may arise. As far as helping him psychologically, so this guy, he's in his early 40s. He's been trying to get on the architecture team for a very long time. I've tried to convey without saying it outright that white people usually make decisions right away, and then they spend a lot of time justifying these decisions. And a lot of what he's dealing with in terms of the deprecation at work has to do with him justifying, at least in my view, has to do with him justifying the decision not to put him on the architecture team. I think that, you know, he's sort of stuck on that. And that's a little bit more difficult. This is a non-white Indian male who was born and raised here in Wisconsin, has lived in predominantly white areas, is incredibly white identified. So he struggles with that. Sometimes we do have discussions about having self-respect in a way. I think in his case, it's better to sort of lead by example rather than telling him things, because I don't think he's receptive enough to that sort of discussion. And I don't want to necessarily get into racism on the job. I mean, there are ways to do it without actively saying racism or anything like that. But I've noticed that since, you know, I mean, I'll just say something like, there was one time where one of the architects said that that this non-white Indian male had a phrase that he would always say, and the non-white Indian male said, "Well, I don't say that." And I said, said, wow, you don't say that. Maybe you should clarify that. And he did. He went back. It was over an email. He clarified, you know, that he doesn't say that. And that was helpful. So I think little things like that. It's been my experience, without being too long-winded, it's been my experience that a lot of non-white people, especially non-white, non-black people, when they see somebody who's a little bit more, either more codified or more outspoken about racism, they tend to gravitate towards that person as a protector. This is United Independent. I really am not in the business of trying to protect him, nor am I capable of doing so. But I do try to give him some tips or some feedback that I think will be constructive. I hope that wasn't too long-winded. I hope I answered your question.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, and great self-respect with just all the help that you've given him so far. And just not talking bad about him when they were trying to get you to do that, and even just brilliant, just the discernment that you've had in just analyzing your situation and knowing what you're dealing with and how to deal with it. And one more thing I just wanted to say to the firefighter, I've been meaning to say this to you. I wish you the best with your mom, and I really hope that she gets well, and that if she heals, that she heals, and that if she doesn't, that you will just be, you know, okay. And I really commend you for all the taking care of her that you're doing. And I understand that's your mom, but not everyone does that. And I just really wish you the best. And I hope that you, you know, and your family would just be okay through this very tough time. And that was it. I'll mute my line. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Ashe, well said. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943 pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Folks, if you have any thoughts, observations, feel free. I will, I guess, say to a codified software developer that that is worthy of commendation, I think, to, from the weak position that we're all in, to be in the work situation, to be able to still make that effort to try to reach out as best you can to help another victim, and to help them, you know, addressing some self-respect and trying to address some of their frustrations that they're experiencing because of racism, and doing so without even mentioning racism. Like, that is definitely, I think, exercising black self-respect. I think Dr. Welsing would definitely send out a commendation for that as well. Did other folks have commentary they wanted to share also? While folks are lollygagging, question, have folks made any adjustments to their counter-racist code, meaning, and talking specifically about workplace counter-racist code, meaning that it might be a specific way that you did things that was a part of your code before, specific way that you said things, and you since made an adjustment, hopefully an upgrade, where you say, well, this is the result that I was getting before, but by making a tweak here, a tweak there, boom, much better position. This works even better than what I was doing before. Has anyone discovered any upgrades to their workplace counter-racism code? That would be grand. Thought, if you are listening in, you can email. We'll definitely share, because we are always looking for suggestions, things that folks have figured out that work well for solving problems.
Can I be heard one more time, Gus?
Yes, ma'am. Caller in Wisconsin.
Yes, sir. To that question, I have, and I think this situation with this non-white Indian male, I have been really paying attention to how non-white, non-black people are victimized by racism. And that's really helped me in terms of not having conflict with non-white, non-black people. In my field, there are more non-white, non-black people than non-white black people. And I think that sometimes as black people, we can sort of lose sight of the idea that the principal enemy in all of this is racist man, racist woman. And we direct our attention to non-white, non-black people because they are mistreated in different ways than we are. And generally, we are treated much, much worse. But that has been one adjustment that I've made over the past few years. I really made this adjustment to see non-white, non-black people as victims of racism. And that's really helped me immensely in how I operate at work. So with that on my mind, thanks.
Hmm. Helped you immensely how?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
Helped you immensely how?
Oh, I'm sorry. Well, first of all, I have not gotten into any conflict. So previously, I would see them as combatants. And, you know, when the anti-blackness showed up in them, I would automatically respond with some sort of rancor or, you know, some sort of aggressiveness. And now understanding a little bit more, you know, understanding that the anti-blackness is not the product of anything that they're doing per se, but is the product of the system that we're all living in. That's really helped me in terms of minimizing conflict, greatly. And two, and just seeing, you know, just dealing with other black people. Again, not having that idea that, you know, these are coons or Uncle Toms, but that they're just people who are trying to survive in a very terroristic system has helped me minimize conflict immensely. Hopefully that was enough.
Absolutely. Very detailed. Wow. I do not think I have heard that too often where people say that has been a result where they end up being more patient specifically with non-black, non-white people and getting a better grasp that they too are victims and are not combatants. That is, yeah, I think it's totally accurate, totally logical. Just it's irregular. I think it's very kind. I think racists have designed things so that it's very easy, very common for us to direct some of our frustrations at other non-white people, be they black people or non-white, non-black people. That is very common. Dr. Welsing, she said that's one of our primary reflexes of the system of white supremacy is to strike out at other victims. That is very logical. That takes a high level of codification, disciplined codification, I think, to kind of keep that in perspective at all times, because it can be frustrating sometimes. Other folks have commentary that they wanted to get in or upgrades, any upgrades to their workplace codification? Stacy in the UK.
Just on the upgrade, I have said that I am correcting my code. I am avoiding discussions with non-white people. And so even though the conversation around the network was clearly to do with racism in the workplace, I really didn't make too many comments and just made supportive sounds or interest, sounds of interest, but very neutral. So that I am not entering into conflict with that non-white male, but also as a way of exiting, because I was obviously involved in the network or the activities that came out of the round table. And it's my way of exiting gracefully without conflict from that whole process. However, you know, I did speak to another black female who I had mentioned before was being used by racists to probe me for information. And she was reaching out to me even when I was not in the office, but it was easy for me to ignore that contact. But over the last 2 weeks, she has been trying to talk to me because she has her own situation that she's dealing with, which has been horrendous. But at the same time, I still think she's being used by the racist, aggressive director. And what she had done, and I guess this is a cautionary tale as well for keeping any of your own situations or terrorism that you're going through to yourself. Because what she had done last year, there was a HR director who has now left and has been replaced by a non-black, non-white female. But last week she informed me that how she had had a meeting with the head of the director of HR and had mentioned my situation as part of her challenge to HR about how she'd been discriminated against. And she informed me that she didn't mention my name, but she just talked about, gave my example. But as I hadn't spoken to her for the best part of a year, she didn't have all of the details. And I'd slipped up a little bit because I had made a mistake of saying to her, oh, well, my grievance was not held. And what I hadn't realised is that I didn't actually tell her about the grievance. But I was a little bit shocked at that point when she, you know, because it was after that point that she said to me that she had spoken again to this new director about my situation. So this week, I went to her and I spoke to her. And, you know, I didn't want to get into conflict, but this is a way of me, again, correcting my code. And I guess part of my code of that correction process is neutralizing any conflict with people who I did used to engage in those conversations with. So I spoke to her and I said, look, I'd rather you didn't mention anything about me or my situation, because the HR director was giving her the impression that she didn't know anything. And I said, look, I mean, you should realize that there's nothing confidential in the organization. And I'm not sure that it is the case that the director isn't aware of everything going on in the organization, but I wouldn't make assumptions. But given the difficulty of my situation, I'd rather you didn't kind of raise it again. As she acknowledged what I said. Now, whether she will correct that behavior or not, I don't know. However, what it did do, because I was actually really annoyed that she'd done it, but I didn't want to get into conflict with her. So for me, that was me neutralizing, hopefully, a situation there, but also as a way of closing down conversations I've had with people. And I guess there will be a few other people that I do need to have a similar approach with, that where I had been quite open with them before, correcting my behavior, but with a way, or my code, in a way where it doesn't lead to future conflict with those non-white individuals who I did share with in the past. But I'll mute my line there, Gus.
Much obliged, Stacey in the UK. I think we talked about that earlier on this very program just a few minutes ago. No secrets in the system of white supremacy. We should all have that assumption. I don't care what the job is. I don't care if you're the CEO. If you are making fries at McDonald's, you should assume that there are no secrets, that the whites, they know all kinds of things about what's happening on that job, about you, what you're doing on the job. That should just be taken for granted as long as there is a system of white supremacy. And I said that before. If you share something with a non-white person, absolutely, you should be comfortable with that being repeated forever, transcribed. We're going to have it on a loudspeaker for the next 5 years. If you're not comfortable with that, don't share, because that sort of thing is very likely to happen. A plus for going, not cursing her out, not getting an attitude, just using logic to explain. Great job looking to minimize. I said that pretty regularly. I think that's one of the primary goals that we should have as non-white people, and particularly if we say we're more informed, working to minimize conflict as best we can with other non-white people. Just what, even if that means we just minimize contact, fine, but doing all that we can to minimize conflict. And those workplace situations, I think just being very mindful about what we share with other non-white people, and remembering that confused victims, man, they can do a lot of the confusion is lethal. Confused victims can do a lot of damage. Really be mindful of that when you're thinking about what you want to talk about. I talked about having those established boundaries where you already are thinking, these are things that are on my list that I am willing to talk about, which should be a very small list if it's a lot of whites. These are things that I am not going to talk about, racism being one of the primary ones. We have other folks who had questions, comments, work, counter-racist upgrades to their workplace code.
Can I be heard?
Our caller in Florida.
Thank you very much, sir. My update, I'm thinking that I learned to begin to ask more questions and get used to documentation, because at least for the first maybe 3 or 4 years, I was in another department, and the first supervisor I had, he was always making these types of jokes and kinds of innuendo type racist comments, and I think he noticed that I would respond to him in a different way than other people would, and I noticed that people would feed into it and try to throw an insult back at him, and I did that sometimes earlier on. Then I just realized I could just either just be silent or just ask questions and let somebody else make a comment, and it'll go on to them. Like that one where I shared a couple years ago about, you know, the black microwave and the white microwave. And he said to me, like, man, what do you have against black microwaves? So, and he looked at me and he asked me a question. And I was like, well, you was talking to so-and-so right behind me, right? So he pretty much got off of making a comment to me, but he was very inventive in how he was able to make on the fly, like right there live, commentary, statements, you know, about racism. And he is retired, but I still employ that same tactic or codification about asking questions and, you know, not having to say anything, and definitely getting used to documenting everything that happens. And that's the only thing I have to share. Thank you.
Documenting, I think, is a big one for lots of folks. Documenting and then not having to respond. I think those are, I guess, two big ones for a lot of people. You don't have to respond. They can say whatever they want. Everything does not require a response. I think it might be some aspect of human nature. If someone says something, to reply, especially if it seems like it's a question or if they're talking to you, even if it's something racist or discourteous, I think there's some aspect of almost like conversational momentum that pulls you into responding. But the discipline to remain silent, sometimes that is the best way to proceed. And that will stick out too. Racists will notice, like, this nigger is real, you know, choosy about when to speak and what to say when he or she does speak. They will notice that. But yeah, those are major additions, I would say, to any code. I think those are suggestions that get mentioned frequently for that reason. Other folks have comments, questions, there any upgrades you would like to share to your personal workplace code?
Can you be heard?
Yes, ma'am, Ivy.
Oh, Gus, I wanted to know if I could share a positive experience that I had with being patient with another non-white victim, but this did not happen at work. It was actually at her place of employment, and I was the customer, and she was the employee. But if it's too irrelevant, and it's kind of an update as well, something I mentioned a long time ago, but if it's too irrelevant, then I won't share.
I reckon sounds like at least for the other victim involved, she was at work, so I guess it seems like there could be a element of workplace racism there somehow.
Yeah, and I thought that it might be helpful for just, you know, on the job, maybe implementing this could help. But what it was is that I shared a long time ago that an Asian woman, she when I pulled up to the window at a pharmacy, she wasted my time on purpose, having me to scan something that wasn't going to give me any points or do anything, and she knew this. And then she told me that to fill my prescription, that to just go and park across from the window, and that she would wave at me when she was done, and she didn't end up having to track her down. And I was going to report her, but when I came up to the window, I was like, "Is it finished?" and this and that. She started trying to rub it in my face, saying, "Oh, did you wait a long time?" just so she could find out if I had, so that she could say, "Oh, I just felt so bad. I just got busy and I just forgot," and this, that, and the other. And that wasn't the case. She was just trying to, you know, rub it in. And I was just like, you know, it's okay. I was very patient and pleasant with her. And I still was going to report her when I shared it with you all, but then I kept on thinking about it, and I thought, well, you know, if she continues this behavior, then I'll do so. So fast forward to recently, don't remember when exactly it was, but when I pulled up to the window this time, she was overly pleasant. Told me to have a wonderful day, told me she would, you know, be right back. She was assuring me. And what's interesting is that when she told me she would be right back, I actually thought she was wasting my time again, that she was going to go and disappear forever, like I had saw her do with a bunch of other Black people as I was waiting for my medicine to be filled. I just saw her needlessly wasting other Black people's time. And so I thought that's what she was going to do to me. But no, she came right back, and she just was, and it just seemed to pay off to be patient with her in that moment. And so, you know, on the job, that could possibly work. That doesn't mean that you continue to take abuse, and you know, VGQ, and you work out, you know, your particular code, but I'm just saying that that's something that may help to just exercise that patience as long as you can. And then if it gets ridiculous, then, you know, you have to do what you got to do. But it seemed to work for my particular situation. And even how she acted towards me, even though when I pulled up to the window, I was irritated with her, but I didn't show it. And I was even overly grateful in my demeanor and even in my smile and all of that. I seemed to be very receptive to her change in behavior, even though I wasn't fully, because I was still somewhat irritated. I was relieved at the same time, and then I was just kind of concerned that, you know, this wasn't sincere and that I didn't really know how to take it. So I was going through a lot of different emotions. But as she saw it, I was, you know, completely on board with her change in demeanor. And I that doesn't mean in the future that she can't, you know, switch back or whatever the case may be. But for the time being, it seemed that exercising that patience seemed to encourage her and to change things between us. And, you know, I hope that continues, and I hope that helps for other people on the job. And that was all I had. And thanks, everyone. Thanks, Gus.
Bravo. Bravo. Black self-respect throughout the broadcast. I'm a big advocate exercising patience with other black people, victims of racism. I think that is super important to going about solving this here problem. I think all of us, I think, would appreciate folks being a little bit more, or at least other black people being more patient with us. I know I certainly would. Just that alone, I think, can be super helpful. I'm glad in that one situation that was able to, I guess, put some courtesy, some harmony back in you all's relationship. And hopefully that'll be a lasting thing. Then maybe you can take Dr. Kanban's suggestion where if you get quality service from a black person, you can write a workplace racism. You can write a little letter talking about how well you were treated and, you know, what service, great customer service they provided and how that, you know, really improved your experience at their establishment, patronizing their establishment. But outstanding. Always appreciate. We had lots of listeners today and pretty regularly showing sterling illustrations of black self-respect and how we treat other black people. Really, I mean, that's a big aspect in my view in terms of if you want to see a person's commitment to solving this problem and really internalizing some of the concepts of counter-racism and black self-respect. How do you treat other black people? How do you treat yourself? Other folks have comments that they wanted to get in as our time winds down, upgrades or comments on anything that has been shared thus far.
I wanted to quickly say thank you, Gus. That's great advice, and I'm going to follow that, and that was it.
Right on. I can give you a personal workplace racism that I am looking forward to. The black female yoga teacher training. We have teacher training tomorrow, so I might be able to even, I'll probably be excited to give an update before we can get to next Thursday. But there is one of the instructors in my yoga teacher training, male. I, you know, said that I think this is a white male. But I asked, I was able to get a photograph, a picture that I found online. I was able to show to a Cal's listener. Cal's listener said, no, I think it's a non-white person. Black female that I'm in teacher training with. I asked her on Sunday, do you think such and such is white, our instructor? She immediately, nope, I think he's non-white. I said, uh-oh, I might have made an error, might have made a false positive. The black female that I'm in teacher training. So she asked, well, why do you think he's white? I give her my reasons why I think he's white. I ask her, why do you think he's non-white? She gives her reasons for why she thinks he's not a white person. She says, forget all this. I'm going to ask him when he comes back to class this week. He was not in class yesterday, but he should be there tomorrow. So she says, I will ask. We should have a tandem counter-racist experiment because I wanted to know if the other whites in class, if they think he's white. So I had already decided I will ask them. So hopefully we'll have lots of questions and responses about this person's racial classification in the workplace. I was a bit surprised that the victim, black female, that she seems receptive and a little less confused about racism, white supremacy. So that is grand. I still have not, you know, mentioned anything too overt about racism. I'm still, you know, being very conservative with any comments, remarks, facial expressions, other than I did ask, do you have white friends? And she immediately chuckled and answered, no. Her exact response was, I've had my fill of those for a lifetime. Any final thoughts folks need to get in before we get ready to wrap it up?
Gus?
Yes, ma'am. Codified software developer in Wisconsin.
Yes. Does she know that you host this radio show?
She knows that I do a podcast. She does not know it is the context of white supremacy. That's why I said I've been very conservative about, you know, what exactly the podcast is about and my views on racism. So yeah, she does not know. It would take quite a bit. Like, wow, the threshold that just some, she's a stranger still to me. I don't even think we've been in class a month together yet, or it's close to a month. Anyway, she's still on the stranger list, basically. So it would take quite a bit to get to that point. Like, oh, okay, you know, let's share more and talk about all of this. She's still, you know, lots of reason to be suspicious. That same thing that I've been saying thus far, you know, whatever you share, are you willing to share with everybody? If that's not the case, then you shouldn't say it.
Oh, I was just asking because it would be interesting to hear both you and her speak about your experiences in this class.
Might be
like you and Ari did with the white ally conference or whatever that was.
Might be possible after we have hung out, we get more time in class to chat it up and what have you. Might be possible. She does, like I said, and you can hear her perspective directly on the white, her Omi who ignored her and the other aspects, because she, you know, has quite, we swapped quite a few stories of terrorism from our yoga experiences. I think folks would appreciate hearing, you know, what she has experienced as a black female in the yoga world. And she's still in teacher training. Even with all of that, she, like myself, still there to go through the teacher training.
Like us.
Stacy in the UK.
I did want to actually share where I didn't maintain my code this week. So I'm still in training on that score, but there was a non-white female who, she's been in the organization for about 2 years now, and my understanding is that her husband is a white Jewish male. I've never seen him, so I don't know whether that's true or not, but that's what I've been told. She does appear to be very white identified, though. So I have had my hair done, and it's in extensions with beads. And last week when I went back to work, I had already prepared myself to give non-responses should anybody come up to me and compare my hair to either Kim Kardashian or Bo Derek. Now, nobody did, actually. I had a few comments saying, oh, your hair is very nice. None of those comments. So I'd forgotten about what I cared to say or not say in that instance. So a couple of days ago, the non-white female, she saw me again. She'd already commented on my hair last week. And she said, oh, I so love your hair. You look like Bo Derek. And so my immediate response was, no, I don't give him to Bo Derek. But I mean, we have a kind of a relationship where we can joke. And I was saying it in a joking way. She said, it's so lovely. It does remind me of Bo Derek. No, it doesn't. And I was commenting on something else. So I said, now you owe me compensation. So he was like, you've compared me to Bo Derek. And there was a white female sat opposite, and I then sort of left, and I did it in a jerky way, but I know that the white female was listening, and I just thought, yeah, that probably wasn't the best thing to do. Anyway, so I went into the bathroom, and I saw her about 5 minutes or so later, but as I was walking away, I could hear her say, or heard someone say, oh, what's wrong with Bo Derek? Anyway, so when I saw the black female again in the bathroom, she said, oh, but you do, it does remind me of Bo Derek's hair to start. And I can assure you, she really does not. But I didn't say that to her, but, you know. And she said, what's wrong with Bo Derek? She's beautiful. I then didn't comment because I'd already realised that I'd slipped up on my code. I didn't comment. I left the bathroom and I thought, okay, I need to practice a bit more. But yeah, it was the comparison to Bo Derek was just way too much for me. I'm with my line there, Gus.
Bo Derek, the originator of the cornrow. Later adapted by Kim Kardashian. Any last thoughts folks want to get in? Much obliged for the upgrade to the code, Stacy, in the UK, almost 4 a.m. Friday morning. Any last comment folks need to get in before we wrap things up?
Gus?
Hey, Gus, I have two questions. Or you can go ahead.
Okay, thank you. I had two questions as well, this might be related to the same person. I wanted to know what happened with the person. I think you said they were from yoga, and that the next time you saw them, you would tell them about workplace racism, and also the person who they said, you know, they called the person's name and knowing that they were absent, and you said that you would tell the person that they did that. Just what happened with those two situations?
Oh, I did tell her. I think I reported that recently on a program, but I did tell her. She said the same thing that I did, that comment that was made at the end of class where she was absent, but the instructor in question, I'm not sure if he's white or non-white, where he said, this black female can do the prayer even though she was absent. It was just I thought it was awkward and could have been an act of racism, certainly anti-black. She said it just seemed really awkward, and why would he say that knowing that she wasn't there, which is exactly what I thought, and just calling attention to her not being present. And there have been many other white people who have missed tons of classes since then. There has never been anything similar done that called attention to the fact that they were not there. The first question about sharing the information with the non-white person about workplace racism, I don't believe I've seen them again, because it was not this black female that I said I was going to share the information with. It was a different non-white person, and I don't think I've seen them again since that. So I've not been able to share. What were caller in Florida? Did you have two questions?
Yes, sir. The first question was, have you noticed the use of any metaphors by like people like talking in the yoga trainer?
Metaphors. It's just word use in general. It's not so much metaphors. It's direct wording. It's so much. I had no idea that we would spend so much time talking about words and the exact wording that you get to use, the types of words. Has been amazing. Even having folks say that you should have a verb journal so that you can have a list of different verbs that you use in class. I mean, I was not prepared for that. So there have not been moments of metaphors standing out specifically in class thus far. There have been some interesting invocations of the use of fair. That was one that I did pick out. It was with in the philosophy of yoga, it was relating to the removal of blackness, darkness. And that was what Guru was supposed to help one do. And I highlighted it in the book that we're reading. So I guess there have been a few in the literature specifically, now that I'm thinking about it. In the literature that we've had to read, yes, we have not got to that in class. So when that portion comes up in class, I'll pay particular attention. In class so far, it's just been more of being precise with word choice, not so much any metaphors.
All right, and thanks for the answer on that. And on the second question, I know you mentioned wearing the shirt. I think it's please treat me like I'm a white person. Does anyone else wear any kind of shirts with messages or like text on them that, or like certain type of colors or anything that kind of stand out? Do you like any images on anyone else's shirts?
When the gay I think it was the last week in June, or maybe the second to last weekend in June, they had the Gay Pride Festival here in Seattle. There was a lot of paraphernalia associated with that. People had rainbow paraphernalia, different paraphernalia associated with the whole LGBT movement. They had shirts and buttons and pins and, you know, all that stuff associated with that. You'll see a good bit of that from people from the instructor in question that I'm unsure his racially ambiguous classification. He had for additional information, I think he might be classified as gay, and he performs the real what I would call like stereotypical gay role at times, where it's just really exaggerated, that if people know what I'm talking about. Anyway, he was wearing paraphernalia that was associated with the gay pride events, festivities that were happening some time back. Beer. That's what I'm sticking out most in my mind is I see people wearing shirts that are promoting alcoholic beverages on a regular basis. I don't know if that counts. alcoholic beverages and gay pride. That's the two that I can think of most prominently. I'll have to keep that in mind as we proceed. But yeah, beer multiple times, something associated with LGBT multiple times.
All right. Thanks for the answer, sir.
Yes, sir. That will do it. We will be here tomorrow. One of the last two sessions on Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man. We will do our second to last tomorrow, 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific, for Ralph Ellison's work, Gus T.'s favorite book all time. It has been a hoot. I did email Dr. Kevorkian to see if he could give us some insight on the question I asked last week about social responsibility, personal responsibility. Looking for his insight there. We'll be here on Saturday, compensatory call-in, 9 p.m. Eastern, 8 p.m. Central, 6 p.m. Pacific. If you have comments, suggestions, gripes, guest suggestions, feel free to drop an email untiljustice@gmail.com. I tried to get back the folks who were disgruntled about the archive situation. I tried to write back as many of the folks as possible, and hopefully the archive situation will be corrected so that I can just say, oh, that has all been resolved and we can move forward. With that, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. I know it's summertime. Great. Well, I don't know if it got above 60 degrees here in Seattle today, but I assume most folks, the weather is warm. It's great. Get out, frolic, enjoy that sunshine. However, you still want to be codified. Race soldiers do not pause just because the sun is shining. Dr. Welsing and many of the other folks we esteem would strongly advocate that we remain sober, take excellent care of our brain computers so that we can crank out solutions to the problem. In addition to being sober, we should buckle up every time we're in a vehicle. Certainly be sober, but buckle up every time. Let's do everything that we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. Stay off the phone as well. That's another one that's easy. Minimize contact with race soldiers, park the vehicle, and then hop on your phone if you got to do that much gabbing, texting, whatever else. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cow signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you're so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning. Even my conditioning has been conditioned.